He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
You know what? Screw it. I just feel like playing this again because I like game winners, and this was 8. And LeBron, somehow LeBron has been in this in the NBA for like 22 years now, and this is somehow his 8th game winner. That's crazy.
And it's rebounded by Luka. LeBron leaked out. They didn't see him. Here he is down court. Luka with 2 for the win. Tipped up and in. Will it count? LeBron James.
I love how happy Rui is there. By the way, you know what? Let's talk about Rui. Rui played in this one 28 minutes. This is so he started in this game. Rui did. JJ Redick said Rui was going to start, but that Rui was still on a minutes restriction. I don't know what the restriction is if Rui is playing 28 minutes. In those 28 minutes, Rui only shot the ball 4 times, 4 of 4 from 3-point range, 2 of 2 from the free throw line, 4 boards and assists, minus 2 in the game, scored 14 points total. But I do think, and we talked about how Rui raises the offensive floor for the Lakers, that's important. And you look at Dorian Finney-Smith, he wasn't bad by any stretch. He played 31 minutes, 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3-point range, 3 boards and assists, a couple of steals, was a minus 1 on the game. Look at the Lakers' wings in this one. Rui minus 2, Dorian minus 1, Vando plus 24. Look at the guards, the secondary guards or the tertiary, well, bench guards in this one. Gabe Vincent minus 8. Jordan Goodwin minus 8. Luka was a minus 16, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that he played a bunch of his minutes next to Vic Gabe and Goodwin. The Lakers are a wing team. They just flat out are. And the sooner that they get healthy enough to play that way, again, that's when we go back to seeing the Lakers that we saw right after the Luka trade. So as nice as it's been, and I think I think Goodwin has one more game after this one before he has to be converted or can't play again for the Lakers this season. But the Lakers are going to have to lean way into their wings or their bigs. Christian Koloko didn't play in this one. Trey Jemison didn't suit up for this one. Markieff Morris didn't play at all. Alex Len didn't play at all. The only center that the Lakers played in this one was Jackson Hayes. He played 18 minutes, 6 of 6 from the field, 13 points to go with a couple of the boards and a block shot. He was a minus 13 in the game. So you look at your guards and you look at your bigs, and Hayes was a minus 13. Gabe Vincent, minus 8. Jordan Goodwin, minus 8. The Lakers are a wing team. And the more often that they play guys who can switch and be physical on the perimeter as well as dive in and impact the boards and all that stuff, that's when the Lakers are going to look their best. And I thought that Rui and Dorian and Vando really exemplified that game, that aspect of the Lakers' identity tonight. Last point here before we move on to your guys' comments. Margin for error. It's right. Where's my finger? There's my whoop. I can't tell. There's my finger. Margin for error. Let's look at what the Pacers were able to do in this one. For one thing, all of their starters were in double digits, well into double digits. Pascal Siakam, 15 points on 6 of 12 from the field. Aaron Nesmith, 13 points on 5 of 9 from the field. Miles Turner, 16 points on 6 of 9 from the field. Andrew Nembhard, 16 points on 6 of 9 from the field. Tyrese Halliburton, 16 points on 7 of 16 from the field. The one thing that hurt the Pacers in this game in terms of their own production, Hallie was 1 of 9 from three-point range. That killed them. But outside of that, Obi Toppin, like, it was a very balanced scoring effort. Actually, their highest scorer in the game was Benedict Mathurin, who played 30 minutes and scored 23 points. He went 7 of 16 from the field and 7 of 8 from the free throw line. You look at the offensive rebounding numbers. The Lakers grabbed 8. The Pacers grabbed 7. The total rebounding numbers. The Lakers grabbed 43 rebounds. The Pacers grabbed 36. In terms of three-point shooting, the Lakers shot 17 of 38, 44.7%. The Pacers shot 15 of 36, 41.7%. So in terms of, like, just raw data there, the Lakers have enough going on there to win kind of outright. But remember, LeBron was a non-factor offensively for a big chunk of this one. Rui still only got up 5 shots in this game. Austin forgot how to shoot down the stretch of the game. Vando didn't score. Dorian Finney-Smith, he made 3 three-pointers in his 31 minutes, but he was in foul trouble for a good chunk of it, and he didn't, like, quite factor into the offense in the way that he kind of needed to. It's a whole bunch happened in this one that would normally point to a Lakers loss, a dumb Lakers loss especially. But when you have Luka and when you have LeBron and when you have Austin and those guys get to work off of each other in at least the limited extent that they did tonight, that improves your margin for error. And I thought tonight the Lakers played more than well enough to win this game. That's why a lot of those raw production numbers look the way that they do. But they also played incredibly stupidly down the stretch of the game, especially defensively, and were able to kind of sneak this game out of there because of that raw production that you got from throughout the game. And that's what I talk about when it comes to margin for error. Luka raises your floor. LeBron raises your floor. Those guys raise each other's floor and ceiling as well as the players around them. And then when you add on top of that, somebody like Austin, who can play the way that he did for all but the final, like, or all but a third or so, or maybe a fifth or so of the game. Like, you're looking at a team that has quite a bit of margin for error. And this is against tonight, a team in the Indiana Pacers that will be in the playoffs. And just last year was in the Eastern Conference Finals. So this notion of margin for error is something that the Lakers are going to have to lean on, and they're going to have to continue to expand mathematically by way of getting up good, clean three-point shots, not the off-the-dribble step-back variety, but the kind where you get into the paint, whether by pass or by dribble, and then kick the ball out to shooters with their shoulders already squared. Limiting turnovers. The Lakers in this one had 14 turnovers. Now it helped that the Lakers had 14 turnovers. The Pacers only had 9, and that's what kind of helped keep the Pacers in it. But the Lakers are gonna, especially the live ball turnovers, when they get live ball turnovers or when they miss 3-point shots and the other team gets out in transition, the Lakers are kind of screwed. So what the Lakers are going to have to do is figure out ways to maintain that margin for error by executing and avoiding live ball turnovers and knocking down those open 3-point shots that they create by getting into the paint. And the more that they shoot those step back 3-pointers off of the dribble without moving the ball, and the more that LeBron and Luka just kind of take turns, the worse this team can look at their worst. But at the end of the day, when those guys are playing the right way and the longer of stretches that they have and the more consistently they can link those stretches together, The Lakers can operate with a margin for error that they basically haven't operated with since the championship season with LeBron and Anthony Davis. And this was, I thought, a pretty cool example of that in its own way. But the Lakers really pushed, obviously, that margin for error to the point where you needed a LeBron tip-in to win a game against an okay, a pretty good, I would say, Indiana Pacers team. All right, let's go ahead and dive on into some of your comments here. I did see a super comment, which means...
Fuck Washington!
All right, Justin Tindall writes, very lucky, worst clutch time defense I've ever seen after being up six. I don't know why Rui is back as a starter. How are we going to get stops? I don't think Rui was a problem there. Luka was getting blown by, basically at will, by Tyrese Halliburton. Again, it's those shifty guards or athletic guards who can score at all three levels that the Lakers are going to basically struggle with. Because you can't play Jordan Goodwin the kind of minutes that you would like to because he can't shoot very well. So the defense, the clutch defense, where anytime Halliburton was guarded by Luka, Dallas got a pretty good look. And, the if it wasn't a good look, it was Tyrese getting into the paint and then kicking it out to another, did I say Dallas? Indiana was able to get a pretty good look. Either by somebody getting into the paint and getting all the way to the basket. And down the stretch of the game, it was like Doris Burke was kind of funny to listen to. She's like, they know the game is still going, right? They know that there's still a game going on, right? So either Indiana was scoring at the rim by way of getting by Luka or getting into the paint, kicking the ball out. And guys were knocking down three-pointers by way of getting by the Lakers' perimeter defenders. And that's something that the Lakers are going to have to overcome. I do think some of the defensive numbers were kind of fool's goldy during that stretch when the Lakers were just absolutely killing everybody. But I also don't think the Lakers are as bad defensively as they do, as they look, when they are playing their worst. So where they kind of land within that spectrum where on one end over here, it's like, all right, we are incredible defensively. We are letting the right guys shoot and those guys are missing. We're getting out in transition and we look overwhelming. That's the good side of, I can't figure out. Oh, there you go. That's the good side of the spectrum over here. And then the bad side of the spectrum is over here somewhere where it's like, well, all right, we're allowing defensive penetration from the very onset of our defensive sets. Guys are getting into the paint and either they're finishing with floaters or right at the rim, or they're kicking the ball out and shooters are wide open and the Lakers just look terrible. The Lakers are going to have to figure out where they're going to sit. Oops, sorry, knocked the mic. But they're going to have to figure out where they're going to sit in that spectrum there. And wherever that is going to be, whether it's on the positive side or the negative side, hopefully it's closer to the positive side. If they land on the positive side, the offensive concerns are less important. But if they land on the negative side of that spectrum, that means you have to now carry that defense offensively, and that's where Luka and LeBron and Austin are going to have to figure out ways to not just coexist but compound each other's talents and make each other better.
I've realized lately that the products I use every single morning genuinely affect how I feel for the rest of the day. If something feels heavy, greasy, overly makeup-y, or complicated, I just stop reaching for it. That's why I've been loving Primally Pure's new Sun Serum Tinted SPF. It gives mineral SPF 30 protection and enough coverage to make my skin look even and healthy, but it still looks like my skin. It has this really fresh, lived-in glow. And their lip and cheek tint has become one of those products I keep throwing on throughout the day because it makes me look instantly more awake and put together in like 10 seconds. The whole vibe just feels very effortless. Skin first, clean girl beauty. Products that enhance your skin. If you've been wanting your routine to feel lighter, simpler, and more natural this summer, definitely check out Primally Pure's Sun Serum and Lip and Cheek Tints.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So the Lakers are ideally, they do both. They defend really, really well on that, on the positive side of the spectrum. And on top of it, they also executed in the half court by way of Luka, LeBron, and Austin being really bleeping good on that side of the court and also making each other better on that side of the court, let alone their teammates. That's the best version of this Lakers team. They aren't always going to be the best version of that team. So the question then becomes, can the defense carry the offense or can the offense carry the defense whenever they need to do either one? And we'll see it. You know, I think that they can to an extent where they can be a pretty good team this season and then hopefully really improve this summer. But it's a guess on my part because we've seen every version of this Lakers team since that Luka trade, regardless of help. All right, let's go ahead and keep on going here. I want to answer some of these free. Okay, so Pablo Valenzuela asks, what's going to happen with Goodwin? I've been told pretty consistently this really is pretty straightforward. Goodwin has been really good and has been a key part of the rotation, and he will likely be converted after this next game, and Cam Reddish is going to be waived. That said, the Lakers are also kind of debating internally, is Jordan Goodwin actually going to play in the postseason? Most people you ask say that he will, because the Lakers need a point of attack defender with better size than Gabe Vincent has to offer, who can move his feet better than Jared Vanderbilt and Dorian Finney-Smith can. And that's where Jordan Goodwin plays a vital role. Again, I would say it's like an 85%, maybe 90% chance that Goodwin gets converted and Cam Reddish gets waived. But if that 10% comes to pass, then the Lakers will have made the decision that the cost financially of converting him wasn't worth the possibility of him playing in the postseason as they trim their rotation way down. Let's go with the next one here, which is Alan Gervais writing, I think Luka minutes need to be with Hayes. Issue is if Hayes is on a three-point shooter, it's going to be rough. Yeah, I mostly agree. I didn't love the way that the Lakers utilized Hayes in this one. I thought when Turner wasn't in the game that the Lakers, now Toppin is Turner's backup more often than not. Which, you know, Toppin has some of the best hops in the league, so he can actually challenge Jackson Hayes at the rim, and obviously Miles Turner can too. But yeah, I think from here on out, it's really clear that Jackson Hayes should probably be a 20-ish minute a night player unless the matchups are really going against him, and all of his minutes probably need to be next to Luka. And that's where Alan, I really agree. Let's see. Yeah, Tyler Moore asking a great question here. Do they even run pick and roll with Bron and Luka? So we saw it tonight. We did see some three-man motion or three-man organized offense between Luka, LeBron, and Austin. But the problem was that Indiana was just switching everything. So, like, the one play that they ran, now Luka wound up hitting a step-back three-pointer while Pascal Siakam was guarded guarding him. But the Lakers ran, like, 7 seconds worth, 7 to 10 seconds worth of offense. The ball never really changed hands, didn't change, obviously, sides of the court either. And the end result was Pascal Siakam guarding Luka Doncic in isolation, which is something that the Indiana Pacers are clearly going to live with. So against teams that are going to switch, the Lakers are going to have to find better ways, whether that's setting screens at a more drastic angle that gets Luka going downhill a little bit better, whether that's, you know, screen the screener kind of stuff, where LeBron goes and sets a screen for Austin on Austin's way to set a screen for Luka, and then you force a bad matchup there. But, you know, however the Lakers choose to do it, I do agree with Tyler about, like, the, you know, the reason that he feels the need to ask the question, do they even run pick and roll with Bron and Luka? It hasn't felt like it to this point, because they basically haven't been. And then tonight, when they finally did do it, Indiana was able to switch a lot of it, and you didn't really get much of an advantage by doing any of that stuff, either on or off of the ball. So I actually think where the Lakers should probably put their focus is off-ball screening, where either LeBron sets off-ball screens and then runs up and set screens after that, or somebody sets a screen on LeBron before he goes up and sets a screen on Luka, so that that other team either has to switch that off-ball screen and then be forced into a tough matchup, or not be able to just switch that pick and roll between Luka and LeBron or whatever. But those are things that I'm sure the coaching staff are going to take a hard look at and try to figure out, because the one thing the Lakers are really going to have to avoid, I get it. Final few minutes of the game, it is going to be your turn, my turn. But over the course of a game where you're getting midway or late in the third quarter and LeBron is sitting on 3 points, that's where your turn, my turn becomes antithetical or counterproductive for the Lakers. So that's where they're going to have to find a better balance than they have to this point. All right, I think that's going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And thank you, everybody, for man, that was fun. You know what? Let's do this one more time. It was a fun game. Let's enjoy it one more time.
And it's rebounded by Luka. LeBron leaked out. They didn't see him. Here he is down court. Luka with two for the win. Tipped up and in. Will it count? LeBron James at the buzzer.
Man, I like Rui's smile is exactly me. Like, he's just like, oh my God, I can't, because I'm literally sitting here saying, oh my God, I can't believe the Lakers have such an impactful player in Luka to where the opposing team loses track of LeBron on an offensive rebound right at the front of a rim. Absolutely insane. Really fun game here between the Lakers and the Pacers. Again, the final 120 to 119. The Lakers win in Indiana. Now the Lakers are right back in action tomorrow night as they take on the Chicago Bulls again, who just beat them the other night. So an opportunity for revenge against the Bulls and specifically Colby White and Josh Giddey. So we'll see how the Lakers handle that game. I wouldn't imagine they're going to take the Bulls lightly 2 games in a row, but we'll also see who all is available on the second night of a back-to-back. I think I saw a stat that this is the Lakers' 10th game in 15 days. This Lakers Bulls game. So we'll see who's available for it. We'll see if the Lakers are able to win it. As I sign off for the night, and I'll pop back on here as we see some of these final results. Boston is beating Phoenix. Excuse me. Milwaukee is just slightly down to Denver. Excuse me. Late in that game. Once both of those games go final, I'll record the lowdown to update standings watch. But for now, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button. Hit that share button. And until the next time you guys hear from me, have a good one. Make somebody else's? I think I said that already. What a game. Holy hell, what a game.